I could see by tracers what they were aiming at, a dun-colored lump that was probably a pile of sandbags. And I managed to get two rounds in that general direction while the strikers pelted it with about 1,000. Something finally hit something, and it went up in a big orange and gray blossom. Some guys pumped fists and cheered, I guess the way Goliath did until his last engagement. I remembered taking comfort in the rifle's weight and balance back then, and now allowed myself a familiar fantasy. Those guys pull up in their SUV and start taking pictures of Kit's bare ass. But instead of the piddling Dick Tracy toy, I pull out my trusty M2010. Right eye or left? Perhaps a new one in between? It occurred to me that this might be the same rifle I'd modified by plugging the barrel with a low-powered bullet. I slid the bolt back and looked down the barrel. It was unobstructed. I could take it to the cops, tell them my story. Some lunatic assholes gave me this rifle and want me to go to Washington and assassinate someone, and they kidnapped my girlfriend to make sure I do it. Here's a note that proves it. Sure, son. Why don't you just put down the gun and sit over there while we check it out? You don't mind handcuffs, do you? For some time I sat there and looked at the weapon. Then I carefully filled its box magazine with 5 fresh rounds, then pulled the bolt back and slipped a 6th one into the chamber. 4 rounds for the car and driver, and then 2 for the grinning schmuck with the camera. Chest and head. Take a picture of this, motherfucker. Nine. I was just about done with waiting, 10:45, when the little phone buzzed. I pushed the button and didn't say anything.
Do you have a pencil? The woman said.
No. Second. I found a ballpoint in my bag and a folded-over piece of paper. Okay.
You have to be in Washington, D.C. in 4 days. You have a room reserved under the name Grant Harrison from the 3rd of July until the 5th, in the J.W. Marriott Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. She paused. Do you have that?
I have it. I repeated it back to her.
Your confirmation for the room and a wallet with Grant Harrison identification are in the glove compartment of your car. You will have to drive there, of course, so your luggage won't be searched.
I didn't bother to write that down. I'm not doing anything for you until I know that Kit is safe.
There was a long pause. Nothing?
Of course not. If you've killed her, I have no reason to follow your orders.
Oh, she is not dead.
There was some line noise and a beep.
I've sent you a photograph of her. The picture includes the first page of this morning's New York Times. She still has all her fingers, but take note of the man standing next to her. If you call the authorities, we will give her to him. She will be killed. Repeat that to me.
She will be killed.
Keep that in mind. She will be killed slowly, badly. And you will be to blame.
The phone went dead and then buzzed. I clicked it for recent and found a call with the current time, supposedly from 411. I opened it and found a photograph. It was Kit, seated, gagged, wearing only frilly blue underwear, which I had never seen. A white rope thicker than clothesline was wound around her, shoulders, chest, waist, legs. Her wrists were tied together in her lap with what looked like telephone cord. Low coffee table in front of her with a metal ashtray in the shape of a bird filled to overflowing with cigarette butts. A corner of a window behind her showed a pine forest. A tall, thin man wearing a black mask hooded over his head stood next to her. In one hand he held a newspaper, and in the other, a long-bladed filleting knife. That was theater, of course. She was at the mercy of anyone, dramatic weapon or no. If not this theatrical knife-wielder, then the fat guy with the camera, or his black driver. The woman with the honey voice, the person who killed Blackstone, the man who'd just talked on the phone, and maybe some to whom I had not yet been introduced. The background of the photo didn't reveal much. There were probably a million rooms just like it in motels and vacation cabins. Fake log paneling, furniture that was worn blonde IKEA or the like, many years old. I couldn't read the date on the Times, but the headline was current. West Virginia coal miners strike near resolution. I couldn't read Kit's expression either. Wide-eyed, I supposed, with fright, looking away from the camera, down at the table. The bandana pulled tight between her teeth. That must hurt. Her mouth would be dry. The dead tobacco smell from the cigarette butts, rank and penetrating. The man's eyes were visible, somewhat shaded by the hood. Windows of the soul, supposedly, though it's hard to read eyes with no other features. Safe to assume they were cruel. Cruel Pulp Fiction eyes under a hangman's hood. Would the long, slender blade reach his heart if I thrust it up under the sternum? That's what the Master Sergeant claimed in basic training. Maybe I would play it safe and just cut his throat. Shoot him a few times first. Kit didn't have any blue underwear. White or nothing, usually nothing. She had been stripped and redressed. An interesting word, redress. Could anything really pay us back for all this? The phone by the bed rang and I snatched it up. It was just the office, asking if I planned to stay another day. I said no and assured her I'd be out by 11.
"Where are you headed?"
she chirped. I told her Washington, D.C.
"Gonna be a madhouse. 4th of July coming up."
I tried to laugh. "Guess I can handle it." She might wind up on page 3 of the Times herself.
"He seemed like such a nice boy. I saw that long box but didn't think nothing of it."
That room in the photo could be a block away, or it could be almost anywhere with pine trees. Underneath the note I had copied from them, I did some calculation. They hit me over the head and took Kit around 11 o'clock last night. 2,300 hours. Almost 12 hours later, they sent me the photo. If they were driving, they might have gone 600 or 700 miles. But they didn't have to drive if they had access to civil aviation. I called the desk, and the woman said there was a landing strip 2 miles down the road. Yes, she had heard several planes take off tonight. In that time, a plane could get them anywhere in the hemisphere. Someplace with a New York Times, but no other constraints. I went out and opened the glove compartment and took out a cheap plastic wallet. Illinois driver's license, library card, and Exxon and Visa credit cards for Grant Harrison. The names of 2 presidents. One gave us Black Friday, and the other was a non-stop talker who died of pneumonia after a month in office. From eating cherries and cold milk, which I never believed. I wouldn't have voted for either one of them. Not much packing up to do. I put our bathroom gear back in her pink suitcase and the rifle back into its box. Went to the office and paid with a C-note, which caused the clerk to purse her lips.
I knew there was something fishy when he didn't use a credit card.
I asked whether I could use her desk computer for a minute, though, and she decided I was probably not that dangerous. She wanted to go off to the little girl's room anyhow, she said. Would I watch things? Sure. The main thing I wanted to watch was the picture of Kit, bound and gagged. It took me a minute to transfer it to her machine. She didn't have Photoshop or anything, but I was able to enlarge portions of the picture. What I mainly wanted to study was a small wall calendar that was nailed to the paneling at the edge of the picture, next to the window. It was a freebie calendar from an Ace Hardware. I recognized the logo but couldn't read any of the lettering.
Maybe the words under the logo were the name of the town. I pushed the enlargement in and out. The first line looked like two words, four-letter blobs, an apostrophe and another blob. Probably an S. Then six blobs. The first one, narrower, might be an I. The second line was five blobs, slightly larger. The name of a state? I called up a list of states, and there were only three with five letters. Texas, Maine, and Idaho. A CIA genius or Jeopardy winner might rattle it off instantly. A place name that was somebody's something in one of those three states. I Googled around and found a gazetteer that would search for place names with missing letters. Texas and Idaho came up blank, but I scored on Maine. Swan's Island. It was a little pinpoint in the ocean, south of Mount Desert Island. Population, 350. I wrote all of that and the latitude and longitude on the back of a postcard extolling the virtues of Traveler's Rest. It wasn't much, but it was all I had. What were the chances that somebody who didn't live on that little island would nail up a throwaway calendar from there? I could hear a despised math professor from my freshman year sneering that the probability was non-zero, which meant not bloody likely, but the only chance you have. But wait. There was a retro phone with a rotary dial on the table. I selected it and enlarged it. Someone had carefully printed a number with clear block letters on the white circle in the center of the dial. I scribbled that down and Googled phone number plus landline plus find address. It gave me a service called Find Phone. I was never so glad to have my Amex card number memorized. I typed it in, and Find Phone charged me 97 cents to divulge 127 Ring Road, Swan's Island, Maine. The clerk came back, and I thanked her and rushed back to the room. Threw everything in the car and reviewed my options. I could go to an airport and take a chance. Try to fly there on my illegal credit card. Airports are a little less forgiving than rustic taxicabs on that, though. I drove for a couple of hours, then stopped to get a sandwich at a Pilot truck stop. Walked through the big convenience store looking for inspiration and possibly found it. The car was parked behind a dumpster, not visible from the shop. I got in and almost enjoyed the microwaved cheeseburger and an ice-cold Coors. Not my brand of choice, but there was nothing less American on offer. I had bought three other items, cash, paying at a register that was not visible from outside. A sling for my left arm, masking tape, and a roll of aluminum foil. I wanted to reconstruct a vaguely remembered science fair project from junior high school. One of the kids had a demonstration of the Faraday cage, basically a box that blocked electromagnetic radiation. He'd built boxes of chicken wire, fine mesh metal screen, and plain metal. The demonstration involved putting a cell phone into each cage and calling it from different distances. I couldn't remember what he had proved with it, but it gave me an obvious idea. Would a container made of aluminum foil block a radio signal? Maybe you wouldn't need a whole room with aluminum wallpaper. If I wrapped my hand in aluminum foil, would it block the transmitter buried in the flesh? If I wrapped the arm up past the elbow, would that keep radio waves from leaking out?